Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Saturday, May 26th, 2018. I'm Sam Minter and Yvonne Bo is with us again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello, hello.
So, agenda right off the top. We are only going to have two main segments this time around. One, the Korea stuff.
Basketball.
Yes, basketball.
The NBA Western and Eastern Conference Finals. We're going to talk sports.
You know, speaking of basketball.
Yes.
I have not completed it yet, so I will not have my review of it yet. But I started watching a movie. I've only watched like the first 5 minutes of it, but it is basketball related.
It's basketball related.
It's Space Jam.
Oh my God. Real? Wait, you've never watched it before?
No, I've never seen it before.
Okay.
So when I eventually finish it, I will talk about it. There are actually a couple other movies that I've seen at this point, but that will come for, well, one other movie I've seen before that. But eventually on this show, we will get to talking about the movies and books that I've seen. And at that point, presumably, I will have finished Space Jam. I've only watched the first 5 minutes so far.
Okay.
Like I made
all right.
I basically made it through the pre-credit sequence and the credits. And that's all. That's all
wow.
I've seen.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
But no, we will not be talking about basketball today. Our two segments will be Korea, everything about the summit. Is it on? Is it off? Is it good? Is it bad? What's going on with that? That's item number one. And item number two is the latest on Trump's immigration policies, which specifically in the last few days, this stuff has been going around for a while, but it's really blown up in the last few days. People talking about the policy of separating kids and their families when they enter the U.S. And what happens to those kids and what happens to those parents and under what circumstances does this happen? So we will be talking about that. We actually mentioned it in passing like one or two shows ago, but we're going to have it as one of our main topics today. So those are the two main topics. That's it. So anything you want to talk about in this intro segment before we jump into those, Yvonne? I know you want to hear about all my books and movies, right?
God, they're all so wonderful. I know. I was going to mention, I did mention this on Slack, last Saturday.
That's the Curmudgeon's Corner Slack that you can get access to by going to patreon.com and donating at least $2 a month to help with the expenses of the show. Okay, continue.
I haven't been going out to that many parties lately. Just, you know, we've just been too busy, work, everything. Okay. It's just, yeah. I sat at this fucking couch while this guy was lecturing people around. This was
a party you did go to.
Yes. I was at this party last Saturday. I was there with Manu. Manu actually, at some point, he had been playing and doing some stuff.
For new listeners, Manu is your son. And
my son.
How old is he now?
He's five.
Five.
Okay, all right. And at some point, he wanted me to play with him on his iPad. He has this car racing game that he likes, and he's not very good with it, and he wants me to help him with it.
Right.
Okay, all right, so we're over there, and I'm sitting with him, entertaining him a little bit during the party. And there's about four people that are to my right, and this one guy decides at a fucking party to have a fucking politics conversation. Okay, mm-hmm. All right. And the guy is just really... From my perspective, I my wife yelled at me about this afterwards, but from my perspective, the guy was like basically being a jerk. Not only was he just saying stupid shit, it just showed that he was an uninformed idiot. I'm not political, but Obama didn't pass any bills. Everything's being returned. Why the hell didn't he get Congress to pass his bills? And I'm like, you fucking moron.
So now, was he, and
the three people around them seemed distressed by this guy talking.
Well, let me ask, because the statement you just made, I could imagine being said either by someone on the right or someone on the left. Which was this?
He called himself that he's not political.
Okay.
Okay. I'm neither. Okay. And then And then, well, but I, you know, he, this guy must be some guy that really likes all the Trump bullshit, because then he said something about that we don't know it's the Russians that did any of the hacking or mess with the election. That's what I fucking just said. I just laid into him. I just completely, I've been trying to avoid these people. But there were three people around who were obviously uncomfortable with this guy talking. I just couldn't take it anymore. I just basically just hammered him completely. Okay. All right.
Okay.
I just basically explained to him how he's a completely uninformed idiot and doesn't understand anything. And you know what? If you know, he shouldn't really even be talking about this subject because you have no clue about anything about anything.
And how was this taken?
Oh, how do you know it was the Russians? And I'm like, listen, motherfucker, because I said, listen, I've been to Moscow. I've seen them talking about this. I saw how they laugh about them. Have you been to Moscow anytime lately? Oh, well,
of course, your trip to Moscow is not the critical evidence in this case.
Well, here's the thing. It's not. But my thing is, the point I was trying to bring to the table is that this guy, when he was talking about it, knows nothing. He doesn't even know. I mean, he had I that was my last statement. After I explained the evidence.
Because, I mean, you've been to Moscow, I think from what you're saying, it's even just...
That was just the icing on the cake.
It's like you've spent a lot of time reading about this. You've looked at the reports that come out of it.
I said that before that. That was just the end part. Okay, all right. My point is that the guy knew nothing about nothing, and he's talking about how he knows about anything. You know, I told him about all the cyber reports that at first had come out, the private companies that investigated, the ones that tracked down, how they tracked it down, and so forth and so on. And then I explained how the private companies agreed with it, the intelligence agencies agreed with the assessment. So the fact that you stand there and say that you don't know it's the Russians just tells me that you're just an idiot.
And again, how did this go over? Were there fisticuffs, Yvonne?
There were no fisticuffs, but I will say this, that the three people that were there that were really distressed by this guy actually felt relieved that I stopped them from continuing to say this, because there were like three people that were sitting there that were also
Did he shut up and go away?
Yes, he did. And the other person was like very happy that I fucking shut up. There was one that was immediately right to me, and she was like, oh, thank God. You shut him up. She was like, I just couldn't take any more of this shit you say.
So along these lines,
here's the thing, right? The etiquette before was at parties that you wouldn't be really getting into these discussions, right?
But I guess that depends on the kind of party you're at, to be honest.
In most social situations, when it's not like, you know, it's not like look, the old rule was with friends, you don't talk about religion or politics. I mean, especially coming from Puerto Rico, where, look, I've seen people go to fisticuffs talking about politics on multiple occasions. And so we had a strict rule about not talking about politics precisely because of that. It's very, you know, polarizing. So I always thought that was, you know, a good rule.
Hmm. So now, one of the things that you mentioned that, you know, he said, you know, he doesn't really pay attention. He doesn't do this, whatever. And you mentioned sort of, well, you're ignorant. You haven't been paying attention, whatever. One of the things that came out this week was a poll. It was a survey from Navigator Research. Just to point it out, there's an article on Vox about it from May 23rd, 2018, which the headline gives away what I'm about to say. Most Americans don't realize Robert Mueller's investigation has uncovered crimes.
Correct.
And so the specifics
and
of this...
And that's one that you want to fucking blow your brains out with.
The specifics of this poll, the question was, to the best of your knowledge... has the investigation uncovered any crimes? 59% said no.
How is that possible? Where are these people? What are they doing?
They're either not watching anything or they're watching Fox. Now, to be fair, with that kind of question, there's sort of people can interpret it.
There could be a lot of interpretations.
Like, I could easily see people mentally inserting the word significant. Has the investigation uncovered any significant
or Trump?
Or substituting for Trump. So, like, all of these people around him don't count. The key is, have they found anything on Trump himself? It could also easily be interpreted, has anybody been convicted? Well, and I guess some people have pled guilty, so that counts. But, but yeah, like, I could easily see this being interpreted by many people as, has it uncovered any crimes by Trump? Mm-hmm. And the correct answer to that actually is no.
Yes.
To date, there has not been anything publicly.
Well, I think usually, if the survey is good, usually a lot of surveys, they will ask certain more specific questions to validate around that question. I don't have that survey data. Did they actually dig any deeper than beyond just that generic question, or they just leave it at that level of genericness?
Since I haven't seen anything else specified, I'm going to assume that it was left at that level.
You see, that's the thing. When those questions get asked, like, and it stays at that level, that happens. It's not, it's a little bit difficult sometimes to ascertain what are they exactly answering. Because, like you said, people sometimes just...
they read into the question what they want. And also, even with questions like that, people will potentially reply not based on the actual answer to the question, but on what it implies. So even though the question is, to the best of your knowledge, has the investigation uncovered any crimes? Many people may be answering that question as if it had said, do you support this investigation?
Right.
So there are a lot of factors that could apply there. But in the simplest reading of it, it just is 60% of the population approximately just
have their head buried up their ass.
Have no idea what's actually happened so far. Just for the record, evidence of crimes that have been uncovered by this. Michael Flynn pleaded guilty to making false statements. Rick Gates pleaded guilty to false statements and a count of conspiracy. George Papadopoulos pleaded guilty to false statements. Alexander Van Der Zwan pleaded guilty to making false statements. 13 Russian nationals and 3 Russian companies have been indicted on conspiracy charges and some on identity theft charges. Richard Pinedo has pled guilty to an identity theft charge. And Paul Manafort is charged two separate indictments, one in D.C. about conspiracy, money laundering, false statements, and failure to disclose foreign assets, and one in Virginia about tax, financial, and bank fraud. And there's been plenty
and
of
that's other, all. And there's plenty of more stuff being investigated at this
point. Yes, and there's plenty of other stuff that we know about through various press reports that have not yet resulted in guilty pleas or indictments, but quite clearly are things that are heading in that direction. And this also ties to just more generally, like, people like you and I and the listeners to this podcast have to remember that the vast majority of the public does not spend a significant amount of time every day paying attention to the details of the news and what's going on.
As we have mentioned, that apparently you and me are like mainlining Twitter like it's fucking like we're crack addicts. So.
Exactly. Like, we're constantly looking at this. Where any new development in this whole investigation scandal, blah blah blah. If 5 minutes have gone by after a new major event and we're not already on top of it reading the article that just came out, then, oh my God, we're way behind, right?
Yes, basically. Yes.
This is quite possibly unhealthy, but certainly atypical.
Yeah,
most debate like, quite a few people, will only check out the news maybe once a day.
Once a day? What are you fucking kidding? What?
And then there are quite a few people that don't even look at it at all. and they'll only hear every once in a while from, you know, some friend of theirs will mention something or something will be posted on social media and that's all.
Look, it's not
and,
like...
And of those people who are checking, and of those people who do check in periodically, a significant portion are looking at Fox News as their main source of news. And as we've seen, like every once in a while, whenever there's something big on Twitter, a bunch of people start posting things that compare like what's on all the news networks and what's on Fox. And it'll be like Russia scandal, Russia scandal, Russia scandal. I can't even say it. and then they'll what's on
puppies!
Fox? Yeah. Puppies or penguins or something, you know, so it'll be something completely unrelated, or it'll be like something about Hillary Clinton and
Hillary. That's
done.
Right, like Hillary's crimes. Right.
Yes. Or of course, Obama,
which is what that
or Obama sense. or the spy scandal, like the whole big, you know, everybody's spying on Donald Trump thing, you know. Right. So and of course, if that's what you're looking at, you'll come out of it with a completely different view.
They implanted a spy. They impaled, whatever.
Yeah, something like that. You know, every once in a while, I will spend, you know, my commute, instead of listening to something else, I'll be listening to, you know, like Sean Hannity or something. And it is a completely different universe. It's like we're not even living on the same planet.
So, look, right now we have Twitter, but... Now, don't think that this is like my a new behavior. Look, before we had Twitter or this stuff, right? Look, back then, I remember that in my in the office in Puerto Rico where I was, I had a TV. Look, I had a TV. I had for years. I had it on when CNN Headline News was actually breaking news stuff. I had it on that, like not stop.
Now, Yvonne. You and I, in college, lived in the same building, down the hall from each other. Do you remember how I was set up during Gulf War One?
Oh my God! You had the multi-screen setup.
I had two televisions of my own, I believe, and I believe I might have borrowed one from somebody else in the hallway, so that I had a splitter set up on my cable.
Right.
So I was watching, I had three different networks on simultaneously at all times, 24/7 playing, watching the latest things from Gulf War One, watching, you know, CNN over here and this over there, you know. So yeah, this is not.
I mean, like when the first bombs fell on Baghdad, look, like I had CNN on like constantly. I heard at the moment it happened. Immediately.
Right.
I'm like, I was taking a nap, if I remember correctly, and all of a sudden it just started. And I turned around. I'm like, oh, fuck, bombs. Boom.
Yep.
You know, it just happened. Even back then, we had these. Well, I love the printout that we had of the AP wire at the radio station. Okay, all right, with all that stuff coming out. Read that mainline.
I'll also point out, like in I remember during the Anita Hill hearings, I guess they were actually the Clarence Thomas hearings. But I remember going to class in college with a pocket radio and with a mono headphone in one of my ears so that I could be in class paying whatever attention to the professor, but also having the audio from the hearings in my ear while I was doing that. I remember doing the same thing a couple years earlier at some summer program I was going to during high school for the Iran-Contra hearings. So, yes, this is not new. Yvonne and I are junkies.
And
we had this
in our email client, I think it was, or whatever, where we could subscribe to news feeds for different industries and things and whatever. And they would come in from the AP. This was like before the current era of like, you know, this was like the transition from like the AP paper wire into some other stuff. And I remember I would subscribe to those and I was like, reading articles on the freaking computers with black and white text. I'm like going, oh, what the fuck? Oh, this new article. And this thing. It was just digesting through those things. Had every newspaper I could get delivered locally. Had freaking like packs of magazines, news, but whatever the, wherever the hell the information was, I'm like, just gimme, more. Yes. I want more.
Yeah.
So yeah, now it's just, it's on, on a computer on Twitter before, you know, there were like massive stacks of paper.
But then getting back to the present, what we got to remember is that there are news junkies like us, but then there are quote unquote normal people who are going about their lives and every once in a while pay attention to this thing and hear people droning on about Russia. And their response is, oh, there they go talking about Russia again. Why can't they talk about things that matter?
Oh, God fucking okay. Yep.
That's
what they say.
Witch hunt. Witch hunt.
Witch hunt. The witch hunt.
It's all a witch hunt. And if you're inclined to begin with to like Donald Trump about whatever, then you believe what he says about these things.
Correct.
Which is, it's all fake news, and why should you pay attention to it? It's all bullshit.
Yep.
Okay, well. All
right. Okay.
On that, let's take a break, and then when we come back, we will talk about the specific fake news related to, there's something about Trump and North Korea having a summit or not having a summit, or really, I think it was all imaginary, Yvonne.
Just imagined the whole thing.
We imagined the whole thing. Anyway, we'll be back to talk about our amazing imaginations after this.
Do. Hello, this is Kimberly. I'm here to let you know about Sam the Curmudgeon's other podcasts, the Wiki of the Day podcasts. Wiki of the Day comes in three varieties: popular, random, and featured. Each highlights a new Wikipedia article each day. They just pick the articles differently. This week on Featured Wiki of the Day, you would have heard this summary for M35, Michigan Highway. M35 is a state trunk line highway in the Upper Peninsula, up, of the U.S. state of Michigan. It runs for 128 miles, 206 kilometers, in a general north-south direction and connects the cities of Menominee, Escanaba, and Negaunee. The southern section of M35 in Menominee and Delta counties carries two additional designations. M35 forms a segment of the Lake Michigan Circle Tour, and it is the Uphidden Coast Recreational Heritage Trail, which is a part of what is now called the Pure Michigan Byways Program. Along the southern section, the highway is the closest trunk line to the Green Bay, a section of Lake Michigan. The northern section of the highway turns inland through sylvan areas of the Up, connecting rural portions of Delta and Marquette counties. M35 is an original state trunk line that was first signposted in 1919, that was intended to run from Menominee in the south to near Big Bay in the north, before it was to turn toward Launce to end at Ontonagon. However, the section through the Huron Mountains in northern Marquette and Baraga counties was never built. Automobile pioneer Henry Ford helped halt this construction to gain favor within membership into the exclusive Huron Mountain Club. Some discontinuous sections were later ceded to local control. The northern segment of the route between Ontonagon and Baraga was retained as a discontinuous segment of the highway. This northern segment was later redesignated as another state trunk line. The northern end was later rerouted out of the city of Negaunee into Negaunee Township to avoid mining activity near Palmer. That's all there is to it. See? Fun, entertaining, educational, and short. Okay, now look for and subscribe to the Wiki of the Day family of podcasts on your podcast playing software of choice, or just go to wikioftheday.com to check out our archives. Now back to Curmudgeon's Corner. Do.
Okay, we are back. So, North Korea, Yvonne. So, there was going to be this summit on June 12th. And if I can reconstruct the sequence of events somewhat. First of all, the South Koreans visited the White House and said, oh, by the way, North Korea invites you to a summit. Donald Trump said, yeah, that sounds great. And surprised everybody by that. And right. Then we had a number of weeks where we were going back and forth and everybody was like, oh, you know, Trump's obviously going to get the Nobel Peace Prize. This looks wonderful. They're going to have a meeting. And we spent some time talking about like, you know, if Trump pulls this off, awesome. Good luck to him.
Yep.
But there's so much room for problems here. He doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. It's fairly clear that they're making this up as they go along. So as late as last week, we were basically saying, look, anything can fucking happen. If this meeting happens, we have the entire spectrum of possibilities from a miraculous peace in the Korean Peninsula to World War III and everything, everything in between. It's just potluck. Anything could come out of it. I don't think we explicitly said that there was a good chance that it wouldn't even happen. But I think you could have implied that. You could have inferred that from what we were saying, that that was one of the possibilities. So anyway, this, about.
Well, I wasn't shocked.
So let me finish filling out the timeline. So a couple of weeks ago, right after Bolton officially came on board, we started having statements. Bolton made a comment about the way we wanted to do it with North Korea was like the Libyan option. And he was referring to how we made a deal. The international community made a deal with Libya, and I believe it was like 2003, 2004, somewhere around that.
A long time ago, yeah.
Where Libya would give up their entire nuclear program and be essentially brought back into the community of nations. They had to also admit responsibility for certain terrorist acts in the 80s, I think. That initially went well. Libya gave up their weapons and it was touted as a big success. Of course, the other part of this is a few years later, things went south in Libya. We did another intervention in Libya, and Gaddafi ended up being pulled off of a truck into a ditch and shot in the back and killed. And that was the end of Muammar Gaddafi. And so when, of course, you say the Libya option,
is that what he means?
The thought process is what you mean
we're gonna
is
have, like Kim Jong-un shot in the ditch.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but the continuation of that, because people say, well, there's not really a connection between those two events. There actually is, because the notion here is if Gaddafi had not given up his nuclear weapons, then people would have been, and he didn't actually have nuclear weapons yet. He had a program to get them. But if he had actually continued and gotten nuclear weapons, people would have been a little bit more hesitant to intervene in Libya. And he would have been able to defend himself. And that's part of that picture. So they all are connected. And of course, of course, North Korea's thought process for their program is they want to have enough deterrent so that they can feel confident that, you know, the U.S. isn't going to go doing something in there, or South Korea isn't, and they want to maintain the stability of their regime and some deterrent, et cetera. So anyway, the North Koreans started making statements after that happened of, you know, first of all, about how that kind of comment was unacceptable, but also there'd been all of this talk along with the, along with the Nobel Prize talk about the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula and how...
Say that three times over? The what?
I'm not even going to try.
Okay.
It was remarkable. I even got something close the first time I tried. Anyway, basically the North Koreans started saying, well, no, we're going to talk about a lot of stuff, but we're not giving up our nukes. That was never part of what we were talking about. And so people started interpreting that as, you know, the North Koreans pulling the football away from Donald Trump, who is now so heavily invested into this. And then Pence made some other comments. And then the foreign minister of North Korea basically called Pence an idiot, which, you know, oh, well, I guess they're right every once in a while.
I don't think, I mean, they're right, but anyway.
Anyway, and so that was the moment that Donald Trump chose to say, oh, well, no summit after all. And then, and I'm sorry to take so long on this intro, because you guys listening all probably know this already. Then Donald Trump is already saying, well, maybe it can happen after all. And that brings us up to today. So, Yvonne. Oh, and the one other thing I should say is completely predictably, all sort of all the Trump world media and commentators have been saying how smart Donald Trump was to do this and how he was, you know, he's doing what he said all along, that if the North Koreans weren't serious, that he'd pull out, no harm, no foul. And that in the meantime, he got some hostages out. They blew up a nuclear testing site. And so big win for Donald Trump. He's doing it right. Meanwhile, all of the sort of establishment foreign policy experts are just slapping their heads about, well, maybe it's better not to have the summit anyway. However, we are in a much worse position than we were. We've given all kinds of concessions for absolutely nothing. And this just shows that the Trump folks have no fucking idea what they're doing. And they're stumbling through this, messing things up left and right. And they're being taken for fools by the North Koreans. What do you think, Ron?
Well, I think that, look, when Trump said yes to this thing, what we said is that this was not obviously analyzed and what the implications was, and you know, they weren't prepared, and they just didn't know what the hell was getting into. And, you know, now that all of a sudden they've dug into it and now they back out of it, it just shows how ill-conceived this whole enterprise was. You know, I mean, Kim Jong-un, one reason that he wanted this, having a meeting with Trump gives him an incredible amount of the president of the United States, or having a meeting with the president of the United States, I'm not necessarily Trump, gives him an incredible level of legitimacy to his people,
mm-hmm.
which is one of the reasons why everybody was avoiding that meeting. Okay. You know, so the fact that he agreed to it, in terms of Kim Jong-un's, I think, profile to his people, I'm sure that it improved it massively. The fact that, oh, look, I can make him, you know, do this. I'm surprised, though, still at this point that a letter was actually written. Why wasn't the summit canceled via tweet?
Yeah, well, the letter itself was kind of amusing as well. But.
Well, yes, the letter was a very Trumpianly written letter as well, you know.
I guess he had more than a tweet worth of stuff to say. I mean, in a tweet, you could only make his comment about, you know, our nuclear arsenal being much bigger than yours or whatever, and you would be done. You know, he wanted to say all kinds of other things about how, you know, our discussions so far, I thought we were developing a wonderful relationship or something. I don't know. Hey, you guys got to go read the letter if you haven't. It's just comical.
Yeah, the letter was just ridiculous. I mean, it's just...
Look.
But I mean...
Here's the thing. And I mentioned this in our Slack and elsewhere, but Donald Trump's scenario after here, you got to remember, and I've been more and more gelling on this view of Donald Trump, is you have to remember as a guiding principle that what matters is appearances, superficial appearances at that, not the underlying reality of what's going on, period. So what was important here to Donald Trump was A, he pulled out before North Korea did. North Korea had threatened to pull out if certain behaviors continued by the Americans, but they hadn't actually done it yet.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Donald Trump wanted to be the one to say, I'm not coming first. Okay. And he succeeded at that. So therefore, it looks like he's the one in control. He's the one making the choice. He is walking away because the deal wasn't good enough. Second is what happens from here on out. There are a couple of different possibilities. One, which it looks like the administration is actually moving in this direction as of the 24 hours before we're recording the show, is that they're hoping to get some additional concessions back out of North Korea and then have the summit after all. So Trump made a bunch of comments in there about, I still want to talk to you. If you ever change your mind, feel free to call me or write. And
well, there were some people speaking about playing this up. Well, this is good because we weren't really prepared. So now this gives us more time to really, you know.
Although the latest from Trump in a tweet just an hour or two before we recorded.
Boy. What did he say now?
Well, he basically said that, you know, if all things go well, we may still do it on June 12th.
Oh, right. I did see that. I'm just like.
So anyway, look, the two possibilities here. Number one, he gets some concessions out of the North Koreans. And again, they don't have to be substantive because it's all about appearances. He just wants the North Koreans to say, okay, we'll do X. It doesn't matter if X actually is meaningful in any way. He wants to say that they gave in on something. And the North Koreans give in on a couple things, maybe apologize for calling Mike Pence an idiot, and then we're on again. And boom. That's a big success for Donald Trump. He'll talk about how wonderful he is for having done that and how the North Koreans are giving in and he's driving a hard bargain. And this is exactly what the art of the deal is all about, right? Second is the North Koreans don't come back. And we don't have a summit. And now Donald Trump can be all like, go back into his sort of bullying mode that he was in last year, where he was, you know, threatening the North Koreans all the time and telling them they have to get in line, and he gets to look tough, and also a win for Donald Trump. So I think from the Trumpian view of this, this is a no-lose scenario. No matter what the North Koreans do, there's a path for Donald Trump to look like he came out on top of this.
He may well position this. I mean, I think that is definitely what he's positioning to his base, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what he's selling with this. You know, and that is what he will say repeatedly about this. Yeah. So I,
now the reality is a little different. But again, reality doesn't matter if all you care about are perceptions amongst your base, who are only listening to you and Fox News anyway.
Yes.
Now, the reality here is if he gets minor concessions and the summit is back on again, well, then you still have the problem of the summit itself and what happens there and what comes out of that. And there are all kinds of possibilities there of good or bad. You know, A, if the summit doesn't happen and you start escalating tensions again, well, we've got all the same problems we had on that in terms of it being a tightrope act and you being right on the precipice of actually ending up in a violent confrontation that results in very bad things. And so those are both negative. And people have pointed out as well that as much as Donald Trump says, we're keeping up the extreme pressure, the reality is by the last few months, that pressure had been let off significantly. China had reduced their enforcement, all kinds of other things had happened. So the pressure
the
is
South
less.
The South Koreans have been sitting with them at the table, the whole thing with the Olympics and all of this other stuff.
The North Koreans did cancel some talks with the South Koreans before all this as well. So that wasn't necessarily going as smoothly as it could. But frankly, I think the North Korean play that would be smartest for them here is to decide from this point forward, we're just going to ignore the Americans, ignore them completely, and just talk to the South Koreans.
Well, look, the South Koreans basically had been sitting with them at the table and they informed like Trump because, look, they were freaked out by Trump.
Yeah.
They had come, and this is actually the guy that confirmed this a little bit, who's a good Korea analyst, and the guy, the BBC guy who had the baby running in his office.
Kelly.
So he sent out a series on tweets around this, basically saying, look, you got to understand something here, that the South Koreans basically went to the table because they were like they just couldn't continue to play this. You know, Trump's playing chicken with them.
Yeah. You know? So I would recommend this thread for anybody who wants to go look at it. It's Robert Kelly, Twitter handle Robert_E_Kelly. He posted the tweet storm on the May 21st, at least UTC, it's May 21st. And I won't read all of them. But it's a relatively long thread talking about North and South Korea, and specifically the South Korean reactions to all of this. It's right. very informative.
Yeah. I mean, you know, look, when you're the guy, like I said, you're the South Koreans, and they're playing chicken with you, you know, with your car, basically, right? I mean, that's not a very great feeling. And they were like, fuck this, man. We can't let Trump play with us like this. I mean, it's not, you know, it's, you know, the likelihood of the U.S. getting nuked is significantly lower than the fact that we get, you know, anything happens over here, we're fucked.
I think the one thing, and I didn't even mention this, but an other important factor of this is Donald Trump made this announcement of pulling out of the summit without talking to South Korea, without talking to Japan,
talking to any of his aides,
without talking to many of his own aides. Which, again, if you're South Korea, the number one message out of all of this is you can't trust the United States at all about anything. They are not going to back you up. They are not going to take your interests into account. Nope. You are on your fucking own. And so you need to decide what is best for South Korea. And not only can you not assume that the United States will come to your aid and do what you need to and back you up, but you can't assume they're not going to do things that specifically hurt you. So you have to defend against what the United States might do.
I mean, that is, I think, the saddest thing about that. Like you just said, I mean, the South Koreans are playing defense almost to a certain extent right now against the U.S.
Right. Right now, they are just as worried, if not more worried, about what the hell will Donald Trump do as they are about what Kim Jong-un is going to do.
Yeah. Totally. It's crazy. I mean, it's totally insane that one of our key allies is having to think like this.
And I mean, we've pointed out, I think we talked last week, Europe feels this way too. I mean, who doesn't at this point? I mean, the Trump administration, America first point of view, and alliances are bullshit point of view, is making it so nobody feels like they can work with us.
Alliances are bullshit to him is part of the fact that he believes everything is a zero sum game.
Right.
Which is the bigger problem. And that's how he deals in everything. Nothing. There are no win-wins. Anything we win, somebody else is losing. And I'm going to be the winner.
Yep.
And that's it.
And this, I honestly feel, this is not something, when we start talking about the post-Trump world, this doesn't snap back to where it was overnight.
It doesn't snap back overnight. I understand that, but at the same time,
Here's the deal. Here's how I would put it.
I think we always underestimate the shit that we've gone through as a nation. I mean, you know, I still have a belief that depending on what happens in these midterm elections and what happens with the next election and how things go from there, that, you know, the damage can be contained to a certain extent. And that, yes, obviously, not everything's going to go back to the way it was, you know, like overnight. But I think that, but that the damage can be contained.
It takes.
I think the first step in order to contain that is in large part what the fuck happens in the midterm election. Because if this midterm election is not seen as a massive repudiation of Trump, I think my assessment of how bad the damage is then changes. I'm doing that based on that.
Now
there will be a significant rejection of this Republican craziness.
Here's my thought. Like, even if the Democrats take over Congress and Their odds of the House are probably a little bit more than 50% right now, and it's probably a stretch to get the Senate right now, but possible. Even if that happens, Donald Trump is still president. Donald Trump is still making these decisions. There's only so much that Congress can do to rein him in, although it's certainly more would happen than under a Republican Congress. But here's the thing. I think the time it takes to fix this is at least two full presidencies after Donald Trump is gone, and maybe more. And here's why. Because the United States has proven that its political system is vulnerable to being taken over by somebody like this. For decades, the world could basically assume that, you know, you may have different kinds of people elected president in the United States, but fundamentally, they're people that you could do business with, that had some notion of continuity of government, that would honor the agreements made by their predecessors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But now the Americans elected a crazy person. So even if the next president, whether that be in 2021 or 2025 or whatever, the next American president, assume that they are Republican or Democrat, doesn't really matter. Assume that they're sane and assume that they're competent and assume that they put some weight into honoring our agreements with, you know, everybody. That person, even if they can regain some trust internationally, all of these countries are going to be hold back just a little bit because they're like, okay, well, we trust you. We like you. But how do we know that the next guy after you isn't going to be more like Trump?
I think you're forgetting, you know, how things were during W, especially with Europe. With what I mean, you know, it didn't take that long for Obama to be able to build a working relationship with them. Well, it took less really than a year.
Here's the thing. They didn't really they didn't really like W, but W like wasn't tearing up the basic institutions, wasn't saying NATO was full of shit, wasn't saying like
sometimes he had Bolton and a whole bunch of these people on
he
there.
He did have some of these people, but they don't even compare in this in terms of this kind of stuff. Was a mainstream Republican doing mainstream Republican things. Trump is in his whole separate universe.
I agreed, but I think that what I'm saying is that, look, there was significant damage and credibility of the U.S. that was like diminished by.
Yeah, I don't deny that. Something as simple as Gulf War II. Everybody thought we were out of our minds, and they were right.
Yes. I mean, Gulf War II was huge. I mean, I think we're forgetting, you know, look, Gulf War II, I mean, look. If I'm going to be blunt, if the worst that happens when Trump leaves office is this kind of shit compared to the damage that we did in the Middle East with Gulf War II, this is not that bad.
It's not a bad point.
If this is the worst that happens, I mean, and Gulf War II is something that is, to this day, we're still living with the consequences every day. I mean, it has been a nonstop war in the Middle East now that we've unleashed for 16 years.
Right.
So, I mean, I know that right now in the middle of it, it seems like, you know, I know it's bad, but I don't think that right now we have the perspective to look at.
Well, we are sort of speculating on what a few more years of Donald Trump will do. Exactly. I mean, if you actually look at objectively what has happened so far, yes, there were a lot of trust eroding things. There are a lot of like, what the fuck type things.
Right.
But has, in terms of out and out, something disastrous has actually happened so far? No, actually it hasn't. And of course, if you listen to the Trump side folks, a lot of them are going to say, just wait to see how this plays out, because You know, he knows what he's doing. He's doing something very different than what everybody else has done. But he's
he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. But
the argument is he's blowing up the status quo. And by blowing up the status quo, you enable flexibility and movement that wasn't available before. And maybe something good will come out of it.
Yeah. Whatever. Idiots. Anyway, idiots all.
So do you think we're actually going to have a summit?
I don't know. Look, man, anything's possible. When he said that we're going to have the summit, I wasn't sure we were going to have the summit. Now that he said that we're not having the summit, I'm not sure we're not going to have the summit. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. Who knows? He'll wake up tomorrow morning and he'll tweet, "The summit's on!"
He might.
He might.
I mean, really, all we need is, like I said earlier, the North Koreans say the right things, suck up to Trump a little bit, and we're on again.
Yep.
I mean, I mentioned his previous tweet. It's, let me actually read it. From Donald Trump. "We are having very productive talks with North Korea about reinstating the summit, which, if it does happen, will likely remain in Singapore on the same date, June 12th, and if necessary, will be extended beyond that date."
Okay. Well, sounds, well, something.
So maybe this will be on and off, you know, and then, you know, we'll...
Yeah.
I could easily see us getting to June 11th and still not knowing if there's going to be a summit on June 12th.
Right.
That is not a out of the realm of possibility thing to have happen.
Not at all. Nope.
God.
This is the new diplomacy.
Yeah. Okay. I think we've said our piece on the Koreas. Shall we take a break and come back with immigration?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll be back. I'm really having trouble talking lately. I should get new lips or a new mouth or something.
But you're fine.
Don't they make like replacements?
Yeah, they do. But you're fine. Yeah, we're not replacing anything.
Yeah, you know, maybe I should get that Stephen Hawking voice box.
Oh, there you go. That would be really interesting. Or you could just type everything and have the computer do the talking.
Yeah, I think I'll have to start doing that, because then I'd get rid of the ha 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 stuttering kind of stuff I almost do all the time.
Right, exactly, because you're typing everything out.
Yeah, and I'd pronounce things closer to correctly more often.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
We'll be back after this break.
Hey, we know when you listen to this show, you have thoughts about what we say. You probably want to vent about what we got wrong or what we left out, right? Or maybe you want to suggest some future topics we just haven't gotten to yet. Well then, tell us all about it. Right now, there are 4 ways to get feedback to us. First, you can go to the Curmudgeon's Corner Facebook page and leave comments on the post where we announce all the new episodes. Second, you could go to curmudgeonscorner.com, that's with a hyphen, and leave a comment there instead. Third, both Yvonne and I are on Twitter. You can talk to me at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E, or Yvonne at I-M-B-O, I-M-B-O-U. Finally, if you don't want to make your comments in a public forum like that, just email me directly at abulsme@abulsme.com. Again, that's A-B-U-L-S-M-E. But, you know, if you don't want us to mention your feedback on the show, be sure to say so, because otherwise we're probably going to respond to your comments on a future show, because, you know, that's what makes the discussion. Thanks, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Okay, we are back. So, for a while, it has been possible that immigrants coming across the border illegally would be separated. You know, if there's a family, parents and children could be separated. There are a number of circumstances under which that has happened, and that has happened forever. That happened under the Obama administration. But the Trump administration has really been ramping that up. And a couple of weeks ago, specifically changed their policy to make that the normal behavior. And they were saying that, in part, this is a deterrent kind of thing. They want everybody to know that if you come across the border with your kids, you will be separated from your kids. They will be taken from you. And that was a very intentional policy position from the Trump administration. This isn't some sort of accident. This isn't something being done in exceptional circumstances. This is now the official policy of the United States. Now, there have been a number of reports in the last week or so that have been sort of accelerating on how often this is happening, how many kids are getting separated. There have been reports that the government has been losing track of these kids that are being separated because we're not sure exactly. Supposedly, I mean, was it Pence that said that they'll go into foster care or somewhere?
Yeah.
You know, so it's unclear exactly where the kids are going, how they're being taken care of. Some of them may be in sort of detention facilities. Some of them may be in foster care. I saw some reports that they're looking into housing some of these kids on military bases. But apparently there are some that they've lost track of and they just can't answer the question, where are these kids right now? Yeah. One of the things I saw, Chris Hayes, who has a show on MSNBC, posted a few bits from a court case and was going to talk about this on his show on Friday night. I didn't actually watch the show, but, you know, just some specific cases of how these kids are being taken apart from their parents, what little information is given to the parents, parents trying to figure out where the kids are. But one that struck me specifically that they were talking about was a case where there was a family from a mother and her child from Honduras who came to the Honduras.
Okay.
Who came to the southern border of the United States. They were not sneaking in. They came at an actual regular old border crossing and presented themselves to immigration authorities and said, I would like to apply for asylum. They were running from their home because their house had apparently been tear gassed. There's part of what was going on there. They were afraid to return home, whatever. They presented themselves to the authorities to ask for asylum. And the kid was separated and whisked away and they don't know where they, it's, you know, this whole thing. And it's like, okay, look, on the one hand, I think it's cruel no matter what. I think it's evil no matter what. But at least if you have an actual case of like, okay, these guys were like climbing over the fence and trying to run past the border guards and get in, or they were being smuggled in, whatever. At least you could be like, oh yeah, clearly, you know, they're at least an illegal immigrant. There's a crime here. Something happened. You know, I honestly, I can't even bring myself to justify it in that case. In this case, they were following the fucking procedures. They came to the border, went to the authorities directly, and asked for asylum. And we're responding to that by ripping the kid away? What the fucking hell? And so I've seen numbers like over 1,700 kids, you know, are in the missing category right now. Now, Sam from the future here. Actually, the number that's been circulating is 1,400 and something kids, not 1,700 and something kids. Although there are other reports that that may be a significant underestimation. I've heard people do all kinds of conspiracy theories about what's happening to these kids. Honestly, I believe it's like government bureaucracy bullshit losing track of stuff and that the kids are probably fine somewhere. But it's still ridiculous. And
I saw something else just
in the last 2 to 3 weeks since this new policy has been in place, there have been something like 300 or 400 kids separated from their parents.
I think it's just sick. I mean, I'm sorry. It's just unless, I mean, the whole thing is just sick. I don't know what the hell else to say about it. I mean, You know, I kept reading about this today, and I know the ACLU is firing a lot, has been filing suit on behalf of them in order to stop this practice. I mean, I just look, they think they're animals. This is why they're doing this. I mean, how, if fine, they want to deport them. They don't want them here. They want them back. That's fine. But if you've got the family together, right? I mean, just okay. Keep them all together and send them back.
Right.
I mean, this is, to me, to do this is a certain, I mean, it's such a level of evil to do this because you want to deter it. I mean, what, well, I mean, these are the same people that think torture is okay and all this other shit, right? So I guess why not this, right? I mean, these people are sick.
This stuff is so, just so unbelievably cruel as far as I'm concerned. Now, and I could see people making arguments, hey, look, you know, if you had somebody who was a murderer, you would take them away from their kid and put them in jail. And
okay, I get it.
Yeah. You know, they would be separated from their family and it would be a tragedy, sure. But it was, they did something wrong, right? Say, forget murderer. You know, if they stole a car, same damn thing. They're going to go to jail. Their kid isn't. They're going to get separated. And so I could see people saying, how is this different? And I think fundamentally the difference is that this is, this is not a, this is not the same kind of crime. This illegal immigration, and I guess this is fundamentally where folks like you and me differ from the folks who like this stuff. I to me, like, illegal immigration is a paperwork error. It's like equivalent in severity to a fucking speeding ticket or something. It's not like something that actually, you know, you're not hurting anybody. You're not doing violence. You're not doing this. Of course, I look at that and I'm thinking about how many fucking people are in jail for selling pot, you know?
Well, yeah. And Sessions wants to throw those, wants to start throwing them back in jail again now, too.
Right. Well, and there are a lot of, despite marijuana becoming legal in many states, there's still tons of people in jail for that. But so, all of these things are breaking up families and causing problems. And I think the answer is, you know, this shouldn't be happening for this sort of offense. And I guess, again, the difference with the people who are wanting to do this kind of thing is they do see coming across the border as some sort of really, really horrible offense that must be punished incredibly harshly. Whereas, you know, I don't know. I've seen people describe it as, you know, the difference between liberals and conservatives on this issue is liberals feel that coming into the country should be, you're right, unless there's a really, really, really good reason not to. Whereas conservatives feel like you shouldn't be let in unless there's a really, really good reason to let you in. I don't know. This kind of thing just, it's mind blowing.
Look, immigration to me is just, look, most of this, look, we're all human beings that were born on this planet. We just came in here, you know, these lines that we made, you know, for nations and things or things that we made up, and the rules that have been made for them have been arbitrary over the years. At some point, you know, our forefathers came in one way different than what these people have come in, right? I mean, it's just and the rules are arbitrary in every sense of way, shape, or form. And, you know, history has shown that, you know, the minority groups, the new groups, or everybody are always scapegoats for the people that are here for one thing or another. It has been like this. I had a book that I read about the rise of the steel mills in Pittsburgh and the ghettoization that happened in Pittsburgh with the different immigrant groups that came in from different countries. That the same things. Same. I mean, you read it. You just changed from like Hispanics into Poles or whatever other country that they were coming in. They treated them the same way. It was the same shit. It's the same bullshit that's been going on for these many years.
All of the rhetoric that always happens about these of like, you know, we're taking in these low class people that, you know, are not going to do this and they're going to be a drain on society and all this. Time after time after time, the opposite has proved true. The new waves of immigrants have been economic dynamos and have generally been more successful than people who have been in there in the past. And I think that's actually the real fear is not like, oh, this riffraff is coming in. It's that maybe they'll actually do better than us, you know, and just fear of change as well. And not wanting these folks here.
It's just,
but I mean, I've said
the same thing about,
I've said before, just as a fundamental thing, the kind of people who will rip up their entire lives to leave and find something better are the people that have initiative, that have the ability to be creative and find solutions, and they are not going to fucking sit on their ass. They're going to do everything they can to put them to make the most of their situation. They're not coming here to get on fucking welfare. You know, I mean, maybe one or two are,
but here's the thing. Those are the lies. Oh, they're coming in here and taking our welfare. It's not true. They're not eligible for it. None of it. About the only thing that they can sometimes find a way to sign up is for school. Okay? Mm-hmm. Public school.
Right.
Okay? But other than that, they don't get Medicaid. They don't get welfare. They don't get SNAP. They don't get housing assistance. They don't get shit. None of them do. None of them do. Unless you're an asylum seeker or something, somebody like that, that arrives in that way. Asylum seekers do get that. Okay, because we're bringing them in for asylum, so we're granting them those things in order for them to be successful. Otherwise, we're just bringing them here to fail to a certain extent. Okay, so you're giving them those tools to do that. Legal immigrants, okay, all right, for the most part, have to come in. Most of the legal immigration programs that we have right now are for people that have employment of some sort or something like that, right, or family. So that's not either, okay? So every time you hear these people say that, it's like, well, I'm paying for your welfare. It's such a horseshit. It's not true. These guys actually have to – usually they want health care. They have to pay for it in cash, okay? Because they don't want to get caught. They don't want a bill sent to them, the collection. They don't want – so they wind up paying for health care in cash, okay? Which is ridiculously expensive, as anyone has known and has seen a real healthcare bill. And they work, and many times they wound up paying taxes, even if it's involuntarily, because they usually, you know, many of them will try to provide a fake social security number or something or whatever to get employment. They wound up getting taxes withheld, which they can't claim because that's not their social security fucking number.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm just, it's just, this is all like very, I mean, it's just prejudice. It's racist. You know, these people don't even look at their backgrounds, you know, where the fuck they came from. And they say, you can't have these people. They're uneducated and don't speak the language. I'm like, fuck, you know, they're showing like Tammy Lauren, who's a fucking talking moron, idiot conservative. OK, that apparently the conservatives love because she's a hot blonde. I guess it's the only fucking reason why they pay attention to her, because that's the only shit that they like. Mm-hmm. She, you know, somebody went and pulled her genealogy and showed how her fucking ancestors that came to the U.S. didn't speak English for 30, 40 fucking years into the goddamn country.
Well, and the same kind of thing. John Kelly made some comments around there, and somebody pulled his genealogy as well. Same kind of thing. The immigrants who came into the country and his ancestry were uneducated laborers and didn't speak English for a long time after they got here.
It's so, like, we're Trumps.
Yeah, so we're Trumps. Yeah.
And these guys are some of the biggest fucking racists against fucking immigrants. They're laborers wanted to come in.
This whole thing, I think this is one of those episodes that if it continues and if it accelerates in the way, like if it stopped like tomorrow, we'll forget about it. But if this stuff accelerates in the way the Trump administration seemingly wants it to accelerate, this is going to be one of those episodes that we remember in the same way as the internment of the Japanese during World War II. It's going to be something that we are deeply, deeply ashamed of as a society, universally. Whereas right now,
totally agree.
Right now, I mean, I'm ashamed of it right now.
I'm ashamed of it right now.
I don't need time.
You brought it up, and I had difficulty even saying my first words about it because it's just so fucking disgusting. I mean, it's just so heart-wrenching to me.
Yeah. This whole thing is based on cruelty. What they're doing with here and frankly, all of the, you know, going after, you know, even illegal immigrants who've been here a while, but who have paid their dues and have integrated into society and aren't criminals and all of this stuff, and how they're going after these people as well, because 20 years ago they overstayed a visa or snuck in even, and now, you know, they're married to an American, they have American citizen kids, they've been upstanding members of society, and you yank them out and deport them to a country they haven't been to in 20 years. It's just insane. This is not what we should be doing. It's so cruel. And, you know, I don't use the word evil lightly, but I've used the word evil for this stuff. This is just...
It's just plain evil. I mean, you know, it is. You're right. You said it, and I was like, yeah, you're totally right. Yeah.
So, as you said, this stuff is going to court. It'll probably take a while to go through the courts, as these things do. In the meantime, you know, there are hundreds and hundreds of these kids that are being separated from their parents. And, you know, this is another thing. Like, what positive are you, you know, you're worried about, you know, bringing in people who aren't ready to integrate and who aren't going to, you know, respect American traditions or whatever. You know, if you're an 8-year-old kid who comes in with your mom and then gets yanked away from your mom and doesn't get to see her for years, and you're put in some foster home, there are already reports of some of these kids getting abused in their foster situations. What are you going to think about that? How are you going to grow up differently because of this experience? You are messing up these kids.
Yeah, completely.
I got to apologize. Like, we're not doing a sort of cold, insightful analysis of this thing because it just makes me mad.
It's very emotional. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm with you on this. I mean, I'm sorry. I some people may think I don't say this lightly, but all it reminded me is like. And I was seeing that they were like putting some bracelets on and tagging them and then separating them. Yep. All I kept thinking was like of the frickin' how Jews were being rounded up in the Nazi regime and being boarded and, you know, tagged and boarded into fucking trains. That's the first image that came to my mind.
I think it's an image that came to a lot of people's minds. Now, there are no reports that we're killing any of these people, just to be clear. But
the way that they're being hurt, but the way they're being herded up, which is like that. I mean, especially with the children, it's just disgusting. Now, I did see somebody, and I can't find a report right now about significant cases of apparently that the kids, as they're being arrived, that they were being abused. Now, I'm not saying a sexual abuse. I mean, probably like. Physically, like being, you know, mistreated.
Right. Now, I also, just to be clear, I've seen reports of the number that keeps coming around is, I believe, 1,750 kids that have been, quote unquote, lost. One person pointed out, I saw that the way that this has been retweeted has been a little bit misleading because it implies that all of these kids are kids that have been separated from their parents in the way that we described earlier in the show. There's a significant portion of them that are kids coming across the border unaccompanied as well. That, you know, but that,
right.
That So they're not being specifically pulled away from their parents, but they're being shuffled off into the system somewhere, and we're losing track of some of them. So who knows? Maybe we lost track of them because they're in a good place. I don't know. But a significant portion of these are being pulled away from their parents. And when we do take kids into custody for whatever reason, you'd think it's a bare minimum that we should know exactly where they are at all times. You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm just being silly.
Oh.
Okay. Well,
okay.
We'll see. We'll see how the lawsuits go. We'll see how this goes. I keep saying it. This stuff leaves me speechless. It's like, this is not something my country should be doing. And with that, I think we're at the end of a show.
Yeah.
So thank you, everybody, for joining us for yet another Curmudgeon's Corner. As usual, the things I always say, you can join us on Facebook, facebook.com/curmudgeonscorner. Like us. Share our episodes with your friends to let them know you like the show and that they should listen too. If you want to comment or talk to us, Facebook is a good place to do it. We do look at all our Facebook comments, and we will sometimes comment on them on the next show. We'll sometimes comment them right there on Facebook. Sometimes maybe we'll just hit the like button and acknowledge that you said it, but we do pay attention to all of that kind of stuff. If you really like us, you can go to patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner and contribute to help with the expenses of the show. And as I mentioned earlier, for $2 a month, you get access to our Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, where you can do all the things that we just talked about on Facebook, but also Yvonne and I and some of the other active listeners and sometimes participants of the show are chiming in, sharing news articles, doing other things throughout the week. So that's kind of fun. And we're also on Twitter. I'm at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Yvonne is at I-M-B-O-U. And I think that's it. Anything else to say, Yvonne?
No.
Okay.
I think we're done.
Well, thanks everybody for listening yet again, and we'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.